From WXXI News, I'm Frank Sigelski, and this is Connections Arts Friday. Rochester, as a city of the arts, prides itself on its Philharmonic Orchestra. Earlier this week, our community was greeted with terrific news that one of our own, a rising international classical music star, was just appointed as the RPO's new musical director and conductor. And he is from Rochester, New York. Credentials include, well, you graduated early from high school, and you studied at the Juilliard School of Music in Manhattan. You were in the Rochester Philharmonic Youth Orchestra at age 11. I mean, it goes on and on and on, but you're here now, and that's all that matters. So, Ward Stair, the new music director of the RPO, welcome to Connections Arts Friday.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Okay. And also, Brenda Trombley's here because she is the morning host on Classical 91.5, and she's a musician in her own right. And to sort of fill in the blanks in terms of my knowledge of classical music with our new maestro. So if you want to talk to him, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Where do we start? I mean, Obviously there's a big buzz. Brenda, do you want to jump in? And maybe if I left anything out, because I know he's got more credentials, and maybe you can buttress those, and we'll go from there.
Well, congratulations, Ward. It's wonderful to be here with you.
Thank you
and
so much.
It has been an exciting week. You've jumped in with both feet. You've raised general awareness, I think, of the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra. People are really excited about our city's rich musical life, so congratulations to you.
Thank you very much.
I think a good place to start is I was in the car a couple days ago with my teenagers, and we were on 490 coming, or rather on the thruway coming back from vacation. We were driving through Syracuse, and he was asking me the difference between the city of Syracuse and the city of Rochester. And I was trying to think of some qualitative differences. But the first thing that sprung into my mind was, hey, Rochester has a full-time Philharmonic Orchestra and Syracuse doesn't anymore, which is unfortunate. Why is it so important? Why have you been on the cover of the Democrat and Chronicle? Why is the orchestra so important to any city's health?
Well, having a great orchestra in your midst is beneficial for a city in so many different ways. I mean, for one thing, this just contributes to a source of overall civic pride, and I think it benefits local businesses, corporations, because when they want to speak outside of Rochester about their vibrant city, it's great to have a thriving arts community. And, of course, having a great symphony orchestra is very important in that mix, in addition to other arts organizations. But also, it's important, I think, to have just a presence of music in the general community and an awareness. And Rochester's has a wonderful history. I mean, we're coming up on 100 years here of the Rochester Philharmonic, and it's got a great tradition of outreach in the community. And I must say, everywhere I've gone, and especially now that the news has broken, I've heard from people all over the world, and believe it or not, Rochester has a reputation for musical excellence, and that really translates a lot farther than many may think.
Sure, especially with the Eastman School as well.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we have a roster. We have a Music Hall of Fame here, and it's legit.
Absolutely.
So coming back to Rochester, I guess the analogy I thought of was LeBron James, but apparently I'm not the first one to mention that publicly, but I thought of it independently because, again, you could have really had your pick of jobs throughout the world, as you're talking about, especially in the digital age where you can hear anything anywhere, right? And you're here. But, you know, you make a nice point about the Syracuse Philharmonic is no longer in existence, or it's unfunded. They don't have funding. So you have a difficult challenge. It's exciting, but at the end of the day, we need to pay the musicians, and to, you know, there's a lot of that involved. It's not just the music piece, and that's a big part of the job, as I understand it.
Absolutely.
Well, what were some, when you were going through the whole search process and thinking about coming to Rochester, what were some of your chief concerns?
Well, one thing which is very important is you have to have a community which is going to get behind the arts. And I knew from growing up here that we have that in spades in Rochester because, as I said, we have a great tradition. And there's – I mean, this week is a great example. I've been overwhelmed by the enthusiasm and the buzz that's just palpable in the community right now. And I think it's wonderful. And, of course, you have to have – civic leaders who are aware of that as well, and it was wonderful to have our mayor, Lovely Warren, with us at the press announcement. It was very kind of her to give her time. I know she's very busy, and we were thrilled to have her with us. And, you know, the orchestra has to have a dedicated group of patrons and a board which is forward-thinking and a board which is aligned with the musicians and with the staff toward a common goal. And I know that We have that here, and our goal is to bring the music to the Rochester community, and our goal in the future now going forward is to look for new and exciting ways that we can do that.
Do you have any in particular that you would want to share with us? Are you still brainstorming? Don't reveal any secrets if it's going to happen opening night, but because that's one of the things that I've noted in your interviews, that that's what you want to do, and that's, I think, what has to be done to get the next generation involved.
Absolutely. Well, I don't want to promise anything specific because I run the risk of then having it change and not being able to deliver on it. But I can tell you in a general sense, we're looking to embrace, you know, social media, digital media, the internet marketing, and not just marketing, but also outreach and engagement with the community. Just in this week, for example, I've had a lot of people contact me through my Facebook page, my professional Facebook page, and I've had some questions come in through that page, which I thought are wonderful questions, and it's been a crazy week, but I am planning on answering all those for those of you, if you're listening, who might have written in and haven't heard back from me yet. But I want to develop a more direct relationship with our community. I want to know what you want to know. I want to know what intrigues you about classical music. I want to know what you're curious about, and I want to have an open, ongoing conversation about that and a dialogue, because I think one of the things that's unfortunate about classical music all over the world, but particularly in the United States, is this perception that we're unapproachable, and that and then it's an elitist art form, because it's really not. I mean, it may take a little bit of a stretch of the imagination, but Mozart and Beethoven were pop artists. There was a time when, you know, they were the, you know, Christina Aguilera's and rock star, you know,
Amadeus.
Absolutely. Rock stars, yeah. They really were. And we've gotten to this place with classical music where I think too many people feel like they're going to a museum or wax museum. But it's a living, breathing thing that we do. And of course, musicians, we all know that. But I think not enough people in the public know it, and they're intimidated to find out. So I want them to know that they can ask us, and we're open to that, and we want that dialogue.
Fantastic. Wart Stare is our guest for this hour of Connections, and Brenda Tromley is here also. And if you want to join the show, talk to our new maestro. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. So challenges abound, and this may be a basic question, but every conductor, every musician has a style, pop or more, traditional classical, or help me out here, Brenda. Are there other styles? Do you have a particular style that maybe people don't know about? Maybe you know about it, Brenda, but others might not know what specifics you bring. Like, do you have a good jump shot? Or are you good at shooting free throws? Come on.
Well, there's like the Leonard Bernstein, hopping up and down on the podium.
The Lenny Leap, that's what they used to call it.
And then, there are conductors that, Christopher Seaman used to joke that he looked like a Victorian mortician, because he's up there in that tuxedo and he's barely moving his arms,
Well, I have a lot of trouble standing still. And a lot of people who've watched my concerts have made various comments about the physicality of what I do. But to be honest with you, I'm not thinking about that at all. I just try to be completely absorbed in the music, and whatever happens, happens. And I think I might jump around. I might actually lift off the podium sometimes if I feel it. But the most important thing is for a conductor, because we're the only one up there who doesn't make sound. Ideally, unless you fall off the podium or something. Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, except for that infamous
tapping of
tap.
The,
But that's at the rehearsal, of course, and in Bugs Bunny cartoons, which are wonderful, by the way. And that's an example, not to digress too much, but that's an example of an era where classical music had a real presence in pop culture. And there's a whole generation of people who learned, Wagner operas and Rossini and all that through cartoons, and I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, sure.
And but going back to the act of conducting, I'm the only one who doesn't make sound. So I have to translate a lot of messages to the musicians just through my gesticulations and my body, and so you have to be relaxed enough to just let it flow.
Do you find that music, you say music moves you, but I found literally if I'm hearing music, I can't stand still either,
right.
And I often enjoy music better when I'm moving. Mm-hmm. Listening to LPs when I was a teenager, I would walk around in circles around my bed, for example, as I'm listening to music, and I couldn't stop. And I wonder what that is. What's going on with the electrons and the, the synapses and such? And there's a great mystery there. And you're bridging the gap between that mystery and the person in the audience who's going, I don't know why I like this, but I like it and I want more.
Well, rhythm is something that's, you know, that it's primal. I mean, that's something that's been around, I think, since one guy banged on another rock and someone heard it and thought, ooh, I can relate to that. I can do that too. And it's been a way that people have come together for, you know, thousands and thousands of years. And when you talk about harmony and melody, there's a lot of basic elements of physics at play there, if you want to mm-hmm. get scientific mm-hmm. about it. And I always feel like, you know, there's some composers who believe that different tonalities have different colors, and Scriabin comes to mind, for example. Have you ever heard of him?
No, but I know music that makes me see yellow and red. I know
right.
phrases
so you, yeah.
where I see those colors.
Exactly. And sometimes, you know, like an E-flat major, for example, can have a lot of people consider it kind of a noble, almost like a blue color.
A royal.
Yeah, where like, you know, I'm trying to remember Scriabin's piano because there's a Russian composer, you know what I'm talking about, Brenda, and he actually had this theory that each key within the octave on the piano had its own specific color. And if you go online, you can find a picture of this keyboard. And so when you conduct his music or play it on the piano, he wrote wonderful piano music. You have to be mindful of that. And I remember I was conducting his second symphony when I was in St. Louis, which is a wonderful symphony. It's got a lot of exotic sounds and melodies, but there's one section that has an impossible key signature, and the musicians were saying, hasn't he ever, it was like, you know, F flat major or something. Mm. Hasn't he ever heard of E major? I said, yeah, but F and E were different colors on his keyboard. And it's important to think about that when you, and to know where they're coming from.
It's fascinating.
Well, let me ask you, following up on the idea of listening, what is it like to stand in front of an orchestra and be surrounded by that sound? What does that feel like to be up there?
It's intoxicating. I always say it's the best seat in the house. I mean, you're and also being able to sort of swim in that ocean but also navigate and move the rudder a little bit is really a phenomenal experience. I mean, talk about being able to engage with 80, 90 musicians all at once. And then there's, of course, the way we collectively engage with the audience. And those moments where you can feel that everyone is just together and on the same page, there's nothing like it.
That navigation process, though, is you sort of setting them free a little bit?
Yeah, there's a lot of give and take. Actually, I mean, with an orchestra, we work in the rehearsals to refine and polish phrases and to get the nuts and bolts, you know, rhythm, pitch, ensemble, things like that, and the basic roadmap of how we're going to shape the piece. But then a performance is very different. And I think that the conductor's primary responsibility in a performance, assuming, of course, that he or she has properly prepared the orchestra in the rehearsals, is to inspire and to provide direction and to sort of to harness the energy of all these wonderful musicians on stage making music together. So it's a constant, very rapid interaction where I'll give them an impulse of energy, and then I see where they go with it, and then I sort of get to help steer the ship, if you will, at the important transition moments. But then I think every wise conductor knows when to let an orchestra go and let them play. And when an orchestra knows that you appreciate that, they give even more because they know it's our time. Let's go. All right.
You're empowering them.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It's a team effort.
All right. So you were trombone was your instrument, and into the studio walks the main trombonist now for the RPO. Come on, don't make faces. Principal trombonist, Mark Kellogg, walked into the studio.
There are three main trombonists.
He's the main man.
Yeah. Okay.
And he's the
there are three of us.
Okay. All right. Well, fantastic. Yeah, yeah. And you know, obviously, you were the head of the search committee for the position that
for the musicians. Yeah, I wasn't the chair of the whole committee, but of the musicians component of it, I was the chair. Yeah.
Right. And you were a mentor to our new
kind of.
I read. I don't know who to believe.
I mean, I always. In fact, I just had a discussion with somebody about this. Actually, not in relation to Ward, but somebody else. Yeah, I always hate it when you know teachers are like, oh yeah, so and so. Yeah, that was my student. Yeah, yeah. I had something to do with it. I mean. Please. I mean, Ward didn't need any help from me, but we worked together a little bit in RPYO, and every once in a while we got together for lessons, but he had other really, really outstanding teachers that did wonderfully due diligence with him. So, but it was nice to be, you know, a very small part of his development as he was a younger player.
Well, and that's that's a good example again of the richness in the community here, because I didn't originally study with Mark. I studied with his predecessor, actually George Osborne, who was a wonderful teacher and mentor, and went to Eastman and studied with Emory Remington and came from that whole wonderful
lineage,
tradition.
Right? Yeah.
Yes, but George didn't play the alto trombone, and he didn't really play jazz a lot. And for those of you who don't know, the alto trombone is a smaller trombone. It kind of looks like a baby trombone if you see Mark playing it occasionally. And it's got a slightly higher pitch. It's got a different timbre, a different color. And so some composers wrote for that instrument specifically. And the first time we came upon a piece, it was Mendelssohn's Fifth Symphony, the Reformation Symphony, in the youth orchestra. I remember asking him if I could find an instrument, could he teach me? And he said, well, I could teach you, but, you know, Mark Kellogg is really the one who plays the alto trombone with us, and you might want to contact him. And, I mean, what luck that I had another resource, and then so I contacted Mark, and Mark was the one who taught me how to play the alto trombone. Mm.
So, I mean, of trombonists, I mean, the talent is here, right here in our community.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
that's got to be huge, because collaboration is part of the process. It's art. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And actually, if I'll not to steal any of Ward's thunder, but I think trombone is actually a really good instrument, I think, to go to conducting from. Not that I would have any experience.
Well,
in
I
that,
would agree with that.
Yeah. Because seriously, because you are hopefully always an active participant in what you're doing, although that you're not always playing. So you have a chance to, like, really check out what else is if you're smart, a chance to check out what else is happening on stage in the orchestra and, like, really take mental notes of, oh, this works, oh, maybe this does work, oh, this is good. And I'm sure that's happened in Ward's career. You know?
Absolutely, yeah.
Maybe even unconsciously at times. I mean, you're immersed in it and the trombone, but what, like, the piano has a bass and a treble clef, and that gives you a wider
ten fingers
of understanding the full orchestra. But the to your point about having an opportunity to look up and look around but still be engaged in,
well, yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, getting to that whole piano thing, I think, you know, there are plenty of wonderful conductors who are pianists for sure, but the nice thing that and I mentioned this in an interview earlier this week, although it was said in a slightly strange way, but was that the great thing about having Ward on board with us is that, having been an orchestral player, he knows what it's like to be in the trenches. He knows what it's like, what works, what doesn't work, the psychology of a group, you know, what affects people to play better, what makes them to feel maybe kind of even beat down sometimes if the conductor does things and maybe not quite the right degree of discretion and subtlety. And so having that in a conductor is huge. And similar with when Christopher Seaman was here, you know, having been a timpanist in an orchestra, he got to know the psychology of an ensemble a little bit, you know, and know what works, what doesn't work. And I know, with no doubt, that Ward will bring that sense of, you know, psychology to what he does with us.
Yeah, fantastic. Brenda, did you have something you wanted to jump in there?
Just waiting for an opportunity to ask you about the search process. And in a sense, you know, you've hired Rochester's musical leader for the future.
Yeah, absolutely.
As the leader of the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra Award, you are, the alpha. But anyway, I was wondering what you were looking for and what were some of the conversations that you were having behind closed doors when you were looking at the candidates and the context of the situation that you were coming into.
Yeah. Well, we wanted to have someone that was going to bring a sense of excellence to what we wanted here in Rochester. We've had that in the past. We wanted to continue that, of course. We also wanted to have someone that was going to be going to bring a fresh approach, new ideas, a willingness to share and lead in the manner that, of course, that they saw fit with the way programs are put together, with the way we interact with the community, all those kinds of things. We also were looking for someone who is going to be a really good collaborative spirit, and someone who was who realized that, yes, they were entrusted with this position, and it was their responsibility to be the leader, as you said, the alpha of the organization. At the same time, you know, my students always hear me say this. I'm fond of saying that all of us is smarter than one of us. And so when we put our heads together and actually work together, we can accomplish so much more. You know, the rising tide raises all boats. And so having someone who we thought was going to bring that spirit of collaboration and cooperation was very important to us. Whether that meant internally with board, administration, orchestra, or it meant externally with the Eastman School, with Jiva Theater, with the Eastman House, with other folks in the community, with church groups, whoever.
With WXXI.
With WXXI. Thank you.
Well, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Media is huge. Absolutely.
Of course. Yeah. Thank you. So anyway, those were kind of our main criteria. Yeah.
Ward, when you were thinking about it, and I kind of think maybe it was like a dating process, you know, going back like, and forth with you guys. Yeah. Yeah. Not you guys, but...
Yeah, of course.
What excited you about the prospect of taking on the leadership of the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra?
Well, if we take the obvious fact that it would be a homecoming, and I have a lot of connections here, out of the equation, just being a music director is something that I was very eager to take on in my career. It's an enormous responsibility, but it also is an enormous opportunity because as a music director, you can develop the sense of style and the sense of the performance practice of a particular orchestra to develop a unique sound and an identity within the orchestra that can translate out, you know, far beyond Rochester after it's really developed. And you can also build on that year after year after year. And I have to say that, you know, I've done quite a bit of guest conducting, especially in the last 2 years since I left St. Louis, where I was resident conductor for 4 seasons with the St. Louis Symphony. And based on that, I had a very consistent presence with them. And we got to do a little bit of a lot of building, actually, of our relationship. But I was not the music director. And it's much more meaningful. It's much deeper when you're the music director. And so, you know, when you go and work with an orchestra for a week, which is typically what happens when you're guest conductor. You could have amazing chemistry and you have a fantastic week and then you leave and you might not see them again for 2 or 3 years. And you can also not have good chemistry and you do a good concert and you say, well, you know, well, it's nice to meet you, you know, that kind of thing. But when you have an ongoing relationship, every week that we work together, we build on what we did the last week and the level continues to go up and up and up and it gets to the point where after a while, there's certain repertoire, certain pieces, certain styles where I don't have to spend a lot of time in the rehearsals working on things that have already been established. So then we can go deeper into the music and the exploration process and sort of stretching our boundaries and expanding our color palette and all those sorts of things. And that's turned me on about the whole music making process from day one. And it's doing that as a conductor is kind of the ultimate way.
Is it kind of like being a manager of a sports team and being the general manager where you can select the players and then coach them? I would imagine you, if I'm understanding you correctly, you felt maybe a little handcuffed by the fact that someone else is a musical director, and so you kind of have to follow where they're pointing, even if while you're conducting, practicing, rehearsing, you see something different in a different direction that might mm-hmm. be really inspiring, and you have to answer to another master there, I guess.
Right.
Is that what the...
Well, it's less about individual personnel changes, and it's more about the overall
sound.
Concept of the group and the sound, because there's a tremendous tradition which, of course, exists. I mean, we're 92 years old, coming up on 100 years. I mean, it's a fantastic, rich tradition. And we have musicians in our orchestra who have been playing with us for many, many years. And so you have to respect and admire that depth of knowledge and that history. And I'm always mindful of that. And no matter where you are in your career, chances are you're probably going to go on stage and work with someone who's played it a couple more times than you or has more experience with it or a personal story which is going to contribute something unique to the overall process. But I didn't really feel like my hands were tied in the secondary position.
Yeah.
But in the secondary position, you're not responsible for the overall vision. And the really big picture is something that I think is very important, and you have more of an opportunity to influence the way the orchestra interacts with the community.
So as you're looking for jobs, I would imagine that is an important aspect. If you were, you know, when you're looking for a position, you were at St. Louis, that would be important that you could also be a music director, no matter where you ended up?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right. Fantastic.
What repertoire resonates with you? Are there specific pieces that you're...
Well, there are so many. I haven't really established what I would call any specialty yet. I've conducted a wide range of repertoire over the years, but I would say Beethoven, of course, is my first love, and he was the one who opened up the whole world to me, so I'm quite fond. I've conducted all the Beethoven symphonies many times. Well, the ninth I've only done once, but because that's a music director piece. It's hard, you know, hard to get that as a guest conductor, although I know you just did that, and it was a big success. It's a fantastic piece.
Yeah.
I love Strauss, Richard Strauss, the tone poems, Brahms, kind of the romantic, really interesting, lush harmonies of that period, but also the turn of the last century fascinates me with, you know, when you had people like Mahler looking kind of backward, but also creating his own world. You had Strauss, who did, I mean, he did Elektra and Salome, and then he took a step back, many people thought, with Rosenkavalier, and then he ended his life with pieces like Four Last Songs, which are just heart-wrenchingly beautiful, and the depth is amazing. But then you had Berg, who was, and Webern and Schoenberg and all these people. It was a fascinating period, and I would say, if you, other than, you know, the high classical period when, you know, Beethoven and Mozart and Haydn were walking around the streets of Vienna at virtually the same time, which I can't even imagine that. That period in the early 20th century is probably the most fascinating to me. And Stravinsky, I mean, I'm a big Stravinsky fan.
Well, writer Alex Ross describes that period as being almost like a piñata that exploded.
Yes,
right,
the rest is noise.
A fantastic 1906.
Book. Interesting,
know?
Interesting. Yeah. We're going to have to step aside just for a minute. Our guest this hour, of course, we have Ward Stair. He is the new music director and conductor of the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra. And Mark Kellogg, principal trombonist, is here as well. Brenda Trombley from Classical. Call 91.5 is here as well, and you can be here as well by calling 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. I'm Frank Sigelski, and you are listening to WXXI Connections Arts Friday on WXXI WEOS, the WXXI mobile app, and WXXI.org. Coming up in the second hour of Connections Arts Friday, we'll first talk about pairings of music and wine with Lisa Hallgren, co-owner of Ravine's Wine Cellars. Then we'll preview the Park Avenue Summer Art Fest with Jeff Springhut and Randy Minotaur, promoters. It's all coming up during our second hour of Connections Arts Friday.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Genesee Country Village, hosting the Laura Ingalls Wilder Weekend with actress Melissa Sue Anderson, who portrayed Mary Ingalls on Little House on the Prairie, and featuring children's activities Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 4. GCV.org. And the Park Ave Summer Art Fest, featuring 300 artists and exhibitors Saturday and Sunday, August 2nd and 3rd, in Rochester's Park Avenue neighborhood, parking behind Gleason Works and at Monroe Square. RochesterEvents.com.
All right, and that's in commemoration of someone's birthday today.
Jeff Tysik.
Oh, Jeff.
Happy birthday, Jeff, if you're listening.
Happy birthday.
Fantastic. Yes. All right, the happy birthdays are coming from the RPO's new music director and conductor, Maestro. All right, and that's Ward Stair, and, of course, the principal trombonist. He was also on the musicians, leader of the musicians search committee for this position, Mark Kellogg. Brenda Trombley's here. And Brenda, you have some questions coming from listeners.
Yeah, we polled our Classical 91.5 listeners through our Facebook page, and I got an email from a conductor in town named Bill, and he had a question about time management. Ward, how do you find enough time to sit silently, to study your scores, to imagine the sound in your head, especially with all the other demands that are going to be made on you as a music director? How do you actually schedule a day so you can spend enough quiet time to do that?
Well, I mean, it's just that simple. You have to block off time and say, this is one, you know, thankfully, you know your projects and the pieces you have to learn, usually at least a year in advance. So you have to look ahead and be very mindful of that, especially in the initial learning process, because that's the most, that's, I mean, it's like fundamentals. You need to learn it right the first time. And then I like to go in phases where I study a piece very in depth for a few days, and then I leave it, and then I come back to it, and I go through that process, and the whole while it's sort of marinating in my brain, and it's always, there's always something going through my mind, musically speaking, at any given moment, and so it's always kind of simmering in there, and then I'll block off time, but in terms of, you know, busy weeks and things like that, I find the easiest, the most practical times for me to study are very early in the morning or very late at night, because once the day starts, it's very active and it's hard to focus. I know some people, some other conductors and other musicians, who tell me they can practice in little bursts throughout the day, or study in little bursts, and I envy that, because I like to really dive in, and I mean, I'll start studying and look up and 3.5 hours have gone by and I don't know what happened. But I need that block of time to really dive in.
Yeah, Mark, do you find that that's a common thing? We'll get to some more questions, but like, can you multitask and do what Ward is alluding to, or do you have to do it his way?
No, I mean, my schedule, because I also am a professor at Eastman School, dictates that I have to. It sounds like it's hard labor. I get to work with great students.
There you go.
Yeah. And so I have to budget my time, but there are times when I just have to try and find a way to kind of shoehorn everything together, and it's oftentimes not possible for me to say, okay, these 4 hours I'm not going to do anything but just this. It's kind of hard to do that. There are some times when I'm able to do it, but most of the time I have to, it's kind of the equivalent of someone who can power nap. Okay, I've got 20 minutes, I'm going to be up, ready, refreshed, ready to go.
Right.
You know? And so it's a combination for me.
Yeah, I have trouble when I block that time out for inspiration time. It's like I've got 4 hours, but I just don't feel it right now.
You can't force it.
Yeah, I know. It's like bad timing. I guess I'll go back to multitasking.
Yeah, and if you've got your smartphone within reach, you know.
Forget it. If that thing's anywhere near me, then whoever calls me next, I'll talk to, even if it's a prank call. Not really.
What's your number? No,
yeah, don't say that on the air.
No, my number's 844-295-TALK.
Seriously, we would love to hear your questions for Ward Stair, the new music director of the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra. This is Connections. It's Art Friday, and we're talking with the new leader of the RPO, and we would love to connect you live with Ward Stair right now. The number to call is 295-9994. That's 800-295-08.
No,
that's the wrong number.
Old number. Yeah, we have the new numbers
here.
That's 295-TALK, 844-295-TALK. TALK is 8255.
Okay.
I know, I still occasionally...
I'm sorry, yeah.
No, that's okay.
Why don't you say that one more time really slowly?
Sure. 844-295-8255. Okay, so write it down.
295-8255. Okay, good.
Yep, put it on your refrigerator if you're listening at home, because at some point you're going to want to call us, and this is your opportunity to speak with the new maestro of the RPO and the principal trombonist. This is it right here, and you'll be doing a lot of this outreach.
Absolutely.
Digital. If I say the word digital, okay, it's 2014. What does that mean to classical musicians, and does that fit in anywhere, whether it's digital sales or pirating or outreach like social media? What does that say to you, gentlemen?
I say opportunity, because there was a time when it was very sensitive about music sharing and things like that going on, and we went through all that, and we asked ourselves a lot of questions, and we examined the whole process. And I think now everyone has a good awareness, and we're all on the same page. And so now we can really embrace that and look at ways that we can maximize our reach and our footprint in the community through digital means, because so many of us are consuming nearly everything through smartphones and apps and things like that. And so why not consume music that way in some form? Because I think that building a familiarity and having, again, that dialogue and that exchange going on will help attract people and bring them to the hall. It's actually a good thing for live music.
I've noticed something in the last few years, though, going to RPO concerts on a regular basis, is every concert starts with an announcement saying, you know, turn off your cell phones, turn off your pagers, you are not allowed to take pictures, you are not allowed to record this in any way. But if you look around the hall during the concert, sometimes you see people taking out their phones, pictures, posting them on Facebook. This is sort of a trivial thing, but how do you think that'll play out in the future when you talk about breaking down barriers between the orchestra and the community?
Well, again, I think we're investigating a lot of possibilities, and some include that very phenomenon you just pointed out. And I think we're at the point now where we have to figure out a way to not push back and resist that sort of reality, because it's a reality. Everywhere it's a reality. We have to embrace it and use it to our advantage and get out in front of it and figure out how to make it better for us as performers and better for the audience.
If I could just interject, one of the things that was very attractive about Ward's candidacy for this position is his willingness, not just his recognition, but his willingness to embrace this. And I think it's very, very important for us as an organization to continue to move forward, and having someone who has that awareness, boy, that's great for us.
Yeah. You're already over that first hurdle.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. So. Yeah, and is I don't want to, again, I don't want to steal Ward's thunder, but one of the things that really resonated for me that he said is that classical music does not need our help.
Wow.
And classical music itself does not need our help. The delivery of it might.
There we go.
But the and again that comes from Ward, not from me, but that's an important mindset for us to assume.
All right, let's go to the phones. We have Nancy in the city of Rochester. Nancy, you're on the air.
Hi, Nancy.
Thank you. I would like to know if Mr. Stair's in agreement with the board chair RPO that classical music is going to change drastically in the next 10 years. She cut the program. She cut classical music concerts to 10 or to 6 from 10, 11, 12, what we've been having. I know Buffalo has increased their classical concerts by 1. And I just find that such a strange attitude to say that classical music in Rochester is going to diminish.
Appreciate the call, Nancy.
Well, Nancy, I think maybe I could clarify that just a little bit. First of all, I think we're going to 12 classic series from 14. But we're not trying to eliminate the classical music. What we're trying to do is free up an opportunity to investigate perhaps other venues, use those services, because it's a big puzzle, and the orchestra has a set amount of services where we can use the musicians' time for rehearsal and performance. And it was really a move just to free up more possibilities so that we can investigate newer formats of concerts and new ways to reach out to new parts of the community.
Okay. So you're doing a concert that involves a video game music for the first time in this coming season, I understand.
That's right. I'm not conducting it myself, but I saw that, and we're hoping that's going to intrigue a whole new range of people, because video games are very popular, of course, with certain groups and age ranges. But hearing that music performed live is quite a different experience. And again, it piggybacks onto the theme of familiarity. If it's something that you're familiar with and then you hear it played live, mm-hmm. It's an unbelievable experience, because it's like seeing something in hyper HD or hearing it, because when you hear the live sound of the orchestra.
Right. And you can see, I mean, there's a lot of visual too. I mean, just
right.
Like you talked about the interplay, and especially for those who are really at that level. We have another caller. We have Laura in Canandaigua. Laura, welcome to Connections Arts Friday. Laura, you're on the air.
Hi, Laura.
Hi, I'm very excited to have Mr. Stair as the new director. I'm looking forward to what you'll do with the orchestra and how it'll change and grow and how Rochester will welcome you home.
Thank you.
My question is, what kinds of American music, which composers of American symphonies and other kinds of music are you looking forward to including in the orchestra's season? I'm excited about what you said about Strauss and Scriabin, and looking forward very much to hearing the orchestra play those composers. But what about the Americans?
Well, there's a lot of American music that I'm very fond of. One composer in particular that I've performed quite often and a lot in St. Louis is Samuel Barber. He's one of my favorites. I think he's a real tone poet, much like Strauss, but with his own unique voice. I love a lot of Leonard Bernstein's music, Copland, of course. John Adams, more recently, is writing some wonderful, wonderful things. In fact, there's a piece which is a synthesis of his opera, Dr. Atomic, which is called the Dr. Atomic Symphony, which really shows off the orchestra in a virtuosic way, and it's very exciting for the audience.
I love that. It's
okay, appreciate the call, Laura. I think people are really excited. It's like a new beginning, you know. Go ahead, Brenda.
Just to dovetail with her question, one of our listeners emailed and wanted to know about your goals for the orchestra in these first couple of years, and specifically any focus on music that you would like to bring to the table. Ruth asks, for example, so many listeners were excited about hearing women's music a couple years ago played by the RPO, so you might have a special focus on women or some other specific group?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one thing that I find as a very very good vehicle to serve both composers and our public and the orchestra, or all three of us, is looking for young, particularly young, but they don't have to be young, composers, and seeing if we can get a steady diet of new pieces, but not new pieces that take up a whole program. It's great to just get a little bit of brand new music, because it gives composers a chance for a debut performance, which is huge for them, and it gives our listeners a chance to hear what's out there, mm-hmm. and it gives the orchestra a chance to play something brand new. I mean, when I made my debut, and I was fortunate to do Douglas Lowry's Freedom Zephyr, that was a fantastic experience, and I really love collaborating with composers.
It makes it seem like an event when it's
absolutely
brand new music.
No one's ever heard it before.
Yeah.
You can't say that about the Beethoven symphonies.
Right. It's kind of like American Bandstand when they would, here's a new single, tell me what you think of it.
Right.
They play like 10 seconds.
Frank,
right.
You are so dating yourself.
I know. It's horrible. I have no other, that's all I got. That's all I got in my arsenal is
okay.
My age. Back when we played Wax Cylinders, I remember it was very... Yeah. Anyway, but
you know, and it's important to remember too that there was a time when all music was contemporary music.
That's right,
all mm-hmm. music
when it wasn't recorded.
Yeah, well, and it wasn't until, you know, please correct me if I'm wrong, but until like the days of composers like Mendelssohn, when composers actually started looking back and doing music that had been, you know, written hundreds of years before, and before
like Bach,
that,
people didn't know anything about Bach.
Exactly, he was this kind of crazy, you know, choir director who did some composing on the side until Mendelssohn kind of brought his music to the fore. So, you know, there was a time when all music was contemporary music.
Yeah, you know? Interesting. All right, let's go back to the phones. We have Judy in Pittsburgh. Judy, welcome to Connections Arts Friday.
Hi, Judy.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Mr. Stair, I'm thrilled that you will be our new music director and conductor. Ever since I saw your debuts here, I was hoping this might be. So congratulations to you and your family in town, too.
Thank you very much.
My question is, I'm a
hello?
Years, and I've been told by a patron I'm a fixture in the left balcony. There are many, many concerts where the balcony is half empty. In terms of outreach to the community, I'm wondering, is there a way the RPO can fill those seats either through a system of rush seats or discount seats? In terms of volume, the RPO may be able to earn as much by selling these seats than they do by keeping them empty. I wonder if you have any input on that or any authority to participate in that discussion.
Well, thanks for your question.
Thanks, Judy.
It's a great one. We have a wonderful staff in the box office who's constantly trying to invent new and very useful ways, or very practical, I suppose is a better word, ways for us to make our tickets available, because we realize that with the fast-paced lifestyles of today, it's harder to commit to a whole season, you know, months out, and we want to make it attractive for people to buy tickets at the last minute. So I know that those conversations are ongoing, and I know that we have a lot of bright people down in the box office who work to achieve those things. And we certainly love to see full houses.
Absolutely.
I mean, your job is expanded now. You have to consider the bottom line.
Absolutely.
Right? And, you know, you've got great people working for you and with you. And do you feel you're ever in competition with maybe other Philharmonic orchestras, or is it still collaborative? What is the landscape of that?
This is, you know, the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra is pretty much the only symphonic orchestra in Rochester.
Oh, I don't mean in Rochester, but I'm wondering, because of, you know, digital, that we can listen to music from anywhere, is there, like, I don't know, maybe like friendly rivalries between orchestras. I simply just don't know about that.
You know, I think maybe a little bit, but you know, it often, I've heard people say, well, gee, why should I come down in a February night to Eastman Theater and hear a concert when I can stay home and I can listen to Mendelssohn's Reformation played by the Concertgebouw Orchestra or something? And my answer to that is always because there's really, truly a fellowship aspect that comes from going to a concert. Mm-hmm. When all people, 2,000 people or whatever, are in one place at the same time enjoying the same piece, having a shared experience. And you can't beat that. And anybody who says, oh, I can listen to this at home, that's true, you can, but it's a very different experience.
I have a seat. I produce the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestras for broadcast here in Rochester on Classical 91.5, and I have a seat up in the loge. And one of my favorite things to do is to look out across the audience when the orchestra is playing, and to see that, to see people in a group trance, in a state of meditation together while the music is flowing over them. And it is sort of a magical, wonderful thing that you can't get that
spiritual experience.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, I know that I'll hear, I can cry pretty easily, and so much of the music, all of a sudden it's like, whoa, it's welling up, and I'm in public, but I don't care, because the person next to me may feel the same way.
Yeah, that's true.
And there is something to be said for that. And I guess that's part of the competitive advantages for live music in person that you need to capitalize on. But to the point about venues, I mean, would you be traveling more? You know, like, would you do the concerts down in Canandaigua like the RPO used to do? Does that still happen?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. You play in Ithaca. The RPO is all over the place.
Yeah.
Churchville, Brockport, lots of small venues. Well, Mark, you know about this.
Yeah, no, it's very important for us to do that and not just sit at home and expect that, you know, people will come to see us, although we like that, but it's also important for us to get out into other venues around Western New York and Central New York, whether it's Geneva or, as you said, like high school auditoriums even, all around the area. It's important for us to do that because it increases the depth and breadth of our mission.
This is Connections on WXXI. We have about 7 minutes left, and if you'd like to ask a question of Mark Kellogg, principal trombone of the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra, or Ward Stair, the new music director of the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra, there's a phone number, and Frank, you're going to help me out on this one.
It's 844-295-TALK. 844-295-8255 if you would like to talk to our new maestro or our principal trombonist or Brenda Trombley.
Yeah, it's been a really exciting week here in Rochester. If you're just tuning in, the RPO did not have a music director for about a year and a half, I think. And just this week, they've announced the name of their new leader. And Ward, you're going to be sort of starting on September 1st and in and out of town over the next year, but then you're really jumping in a year from now, I understand.
That's right, yeah. It just so happened that I was scheduled to open the season, which worked out beautifully, and we're all very happy about that. And so the opening concerts are September 18th and 20th. It's a great program. We have a fantastic soloist, Midori, Tchaikovsky's Fourth Symphony, so it should be a real blockbuster opener. And then I'm coming back in February to do a concert performance of La Traviata by Verdi, which is one of the classic and timeless, beautiful operas in the repertoire. So that's 14-15 for me. We're still looking for other opportunities for me to come back, but that has to be worked out with the schedule and all that. So the 15-16 season will actually be the inaugural season for me in terms of planning and programming. That's what we're starting to think about now. So that will be the first season that I had planned myself.
And that's happening last week. I mean, you're already thinking about what you want to do.
Yeah, that's
going to be exciting.
Yeah.
There is a lot of lead. I didn't realize there was that much lead time. You're talking about a year to get the pieces ready. And so you're, you know, sort of taking over what was already in place. Mm-hmm. And then next year you'll be completely in charge.
Well, and excuse me I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you didn't cut me off.
A lot of people ask me, in fact, one of the questions, a great question that I got on Facebook a couple days ago was, there's a question about the difference between a music director and a conductor. And this is something which is a music director is a lot of the music director duties happen behind the scenes. And there's a lot of artistic planning. And I have to say, we have a fantastic artistic planner in our administration. Dick Decker is his name. And he took up the slack in the absence of a music director and did a wonderful job. I want to commend him for planning the season.
Yeah.
And so now that I'm here, Dick and I will work together to look at various programs and put them together in a great way.
Okay. We have time for one more call here. It's Herman in Brighton. Herman, welcome to Connections Arts Friday. You're on the air.
Hi, Herman.
Hi, Maestro. Welcome back to Rochester.
Thank you.
Good luck with your season. I have a suggestion concerning programming. It seems to have become common practice on this continent, not just with orchestras, but also with recitals, to make every program a mixture of a wide variety of styles. But many music lovers, the kind of people who would be the most loyal patrons, have very eclectic tastes, and they've heard a lot of music, and they know what they like, and they know what they don't like, and they might very often decide that it's not worth paying for a ticket or spending the time coming to a concert if they know they're only going to like one or two pieces on the program. So certainly an orchestra should present a wide variety of music, but not necessarily all in one program. So what would you think of the idea of doing some programs that are specializing in one style or in another style?
Okay, we got to cut you off there. I think we get the idea. We have about a minute.
That's a great question, and we're always looking for the balance, and I think sometimes it's good to have a concert where you focus on a composer or a genre, like an all Mozart or an all Haydn concert or an all Beethoven concert, and then you can also mix it up and look for variety elsewhere in the season. So it doesn't always have to be a variety on every program.
Right, but there are a lot of different interests out there, and you're going to be getting a lot in your ears over the next few years.
And we welcome that.
So that's that is Ward Stair, the new conductor and music director of the RPO. And thank you for being here on Connections Arts Friday.
Thank you.
Mark Kellogg, thank you very much. Principal trombonist for the RPO. Thanks for being here. Brenda Trombley, thank you for bailing me out for my very neophyte-like questions. But
it's been a pleasure.
All right. We'll do it again, and we can't wait for this to all continue happening. On behalf of John Anders, our board operator, I'm Frank Sigelski, and you've been listening to Connections Arts Friday on WXXI, WEOS, the WXXI mobile app, and WXXI.org.